Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yes, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Teams at Brighton. And it is the last episode of the season, ladies and gentlemen, and what a season it has been. It's been one to remember for sure, Richie, for oh so many reasons. But look, we'll talk about the season as a whole later on, and of course who to look forward to seeing in Europa League. Let's talk about the Villa match, because interesting match for sure, wasn't it?
Yes, I think there are several main takeaways. Before the game, I was a bit surprised at the lineup. Six changes for Brighton. Obviously, yeah, he did have to ring the change because he played so many games. But young Yasin Ayari was given his Premier League debut. Dunk once again, not in the starting lineup. Undav in the team. No Caicedo, no Mitoma. Interesting lineups. And also the marathon man, no Estupiñán, finally given a well-earned rest for a bit before coming on the second half. I was thinking this midfield could be a little bit lightweight, and I think it proved to be, sadly. The crowd was really, really up for it. I instantly got Newcastle away and Nottingham Forest vibes. I was thinking, oh God, this is going to be a day where Brighton are just not quite at their best, and the crowd are going to roar them home, and it looked like that was going to be the case when they went 2-0 down. And then finally, the referee, David Coote, had an appalling game. Yes, as you said off air, Tom, you know, thank God that there was nothing riding on this game for Brighton, because it really could have gone horribly wrong, especially with Tottenham and obviously Aston Villa winning. So in the end, it was just a day where I think the feeling amongst most fans would have been, oh, well, we've come sixth. Doesn't matter. Good day out. An amazing season. Not at our best today. Still had chances to at least get something from the game, the amount of chances we created. The officiating in the Premier League just needs to get better. It's one of those things where you go, you know, for example, Championship players don't play in the Premier League sometimes because they're not good enough. But there's not that sort of a hierarchy with referees in terms of quality. There might be in terms of Championship referees, but it feels that there are so many Championship referees or League One referees. There are not really top tier officials, unfortunately. So despite, you know, Howard Webb's efforts to have, you know, be more proactive and accountable and transparent, I think the sort of the quality of the stock that they have isn't great. Yes, what about you, Tom?
Yeah, it was an interesting one, wasn't it? It's safe to say that the referee, David Coote, was probably a little bit influenced by the crowd, shall we say. And look, Villa Park is a very intimidating crowd. If you've got them on your back, you're going to be in for a very difficult 90 minutes. But there were times where you just felt Coote tried to do a lot of nothing and then found a lot on nothing. He couldn't find the right fouls, and he whistled at the wrong time. He played advantage at the wrong time, let the ball continue and all that kind of stuff. It just didn't seem like as if he had full control in the game. And you could see from Gross, he was frustrated. McAllister got a few tasty challenges in him and he was getting annoyed. You got just a frustrated Brighton side in that match. And God knows what would have happened if there was something at stake for us. But I think I speak for a lot of Brighton fans on the day that they were hoping for Villa to win. And speaking to a fair few fans, they said, we want Villa to win today. We want Villa to go to Europe because we don't want Spurs to. Still, we've got a lot of Brighton fans who are still very, very, very bitter from that VAR shambles of a performance at the Spurs stadium. And, you know, Villa were up for it from the word go. I think they were definitely the better side for the best part of 70 minutes. And then towards the end, they knew that they didn't have to worry too much and just pass.
Really? For that long? I didn't think it was that clear cut.
I think it was. I think it was. I think in terms of who's got the clear cut chances, it was definitely Villa. I think they tested our goalkeeper more than we tested Emi Martinez. I thought they had essence of control. If you can understand what Unai Emery's all about in terms of time wasting and cutting the chances when they can. Even when we had quite a fair bit of the ball, it just didn't seem we had that same motion that we used to under De Zerbi. And I think that's down to Emery's tactics off the ball as well. He's very, very good at that. And it's always so underappreciated by opposition managers. And I think that's why it's worked a treat for Villa this season, because of how Emery sets his side up off the ball when they're defending. And it's difficult to read. It's difficult to approach because he adapts it so well. And I really did think that we just didn't have that kind of sense of control that we're used to in the game. But I'll take it. We'll take it as it is, because we didn't need to win. We didn't need a result. We win sixth. We lose sixth. Draw sixth. We had nothing to play for. But can't complain. I was quite pleased to see Yassin Yari play. I wouldn't say he had the best of full debuts. You could definitely get a sense of that because he came off at half time. But I think he was very much a welcome to the Premier League moment for him. And he'll just take the positives, as someone used to say, and then just move on from there and improve, because I think he looks like a good little baller for the future, and I'm sure he's going to get plenty of opportunities. But what broke my heart at the end of it was McAllister. He was absolutely in bits when they all came to us in the crowd. De Zerbi's just got his arm around him, just pointing to him, so all singing McAllister's name. But it was great fun. I really enjoyed it. And then afterwards, going out of the ground, just loads of Villa fans just coming up to us, just jumping up and down. We're all going on a European tour. It was great. Grown men just hugging each other over just the slightest thing in the sport. It was great. Loved it.
Yeah, there was certainly a whole sort of cavalcade of emotions at full time. Obviously, we've spoken about the game itself, but McAllister might have grabbed the headlines overall. Obviously, he was seen crying his eyes out at the full-time whistle in what looked like an apparent goodbye. sorry, got a frog in my throat. So he could be seen being consoled by Lewis Dunk. You know, De Zerbi was sort of pointing to him, I think saying, you know, give him all the acclaim and the praise. You know, Brighton's World Cup winner. You don't say that very often. So it did look like it could be a goodbye. Just going to refer to some comments that De Zerbi said after the match. In typical honest fashion, he says, I think it can be the last game of Alexis McAllister and Moises Caicedo. I am really sorry because they are two great people and two great players. But the policy of Brighton is like this, and we have to accept. I think it is right that they can leave, they can change teams, and they can play at a higher level. We are ready, I think. We have to find other big players to play without Alexis and Moises. So that does seem as if they could be off, both of them, which would be a humongous loss for Brighton. that I think, you know, of all the sort of success that Brighton have had over the years in the transfer market recently, I think this might be the toughest test of all, finding a way to replace both of them. I think personally, I believe that McAllister is easier to replace. Caicedo, for me, that's a real tough task, because when Brighton had Bissouma, I don't think many would have thought that Caicedo would have been even better when he was signed initially and then was, you know, not playing at Brighton, then was shipped out on loan to Beerschot. But then somehow Caicedo has become probably a more well-rounded player than Bissouma, which is, you know, fantastic credit to him. But is there another replacement in the building for him? Or do they have to go big? It's an interesting one. So I think Brighton could find a way to replace McAllister. Fantastic player though he is. I think it will be a real... Their credentials will really, really be tested if they want to keep, you know, performing so well and find a way to replace McAllister. Sorry, Caicedo.
Yeah, I agree. I think Moises Caicedo is an absolute Rolls Royce of a midfielder. He's just so good. He's such a good ball-winning midfielder where he rarely puts a foot wrong, and he's great on the ball as well, which is an added bonus, especially that high level when you look for ball-winning midfielders. They are destined for bigger and better things. I'm still secretly hoping we could keep at least one of them, particularly McAllister. I like to think that because Liverpool have got Europa League, that I think we could just be like, look, just enjoy it for one season. Enjoy it for one more. We've got here. Enjoy the fruits of your labour here, and then go off to Champions League football with Liverpool, because they'll be top four next season, no doubt in my mind. But having said that, you're going to be in for brand new projects, chasing Champions League football. Yeah, you've got European football, but you're going to be part of the next phase in Jurgen Klopp's time at Liverpool. There's a lot there that's very, very promising, and it's going to be hard to keep both McAllister and Caicedo. I hope it's a little bit of mind games from De Zerbi to hopefully do some reverse psychology to keep them both, but I mean, that's wishful thinking, really. So it will be interesting to see what we do to replace them. It was interesting to hear about De Zerbi's comments after the game as well, saying we're not ready for football three times a week. So that, to me, tells me that we're going to be quite busy in the transfer market. We've already got João Pedro in. Talks of James Milner coming in as well. It will definitely be beneficial for us. So there
are... Dortmund guy as well.
Yeah, I keep on forgetting about him as well. The Dortmund lad. So, you know, we are... Yeah. We're moving about in the transfer market, which is great to see. And I think that's kind of us covering our losses as well in January, when in hindsight we probably should have recruited a little bit more. De Zerbi, we all know he wasn't happy with the Albion's transfer activities in January, and it could have been a completely different story at the end of the season. Fortunately, it's not. So I'm hoping that we can actually really move on forward and really recruit quickly, and all of them get a full pre-season in their head, so they're all gel very quickly for when the season starts, because come September, it's going to be very, very busy for us, for sure.
Yes, and one, I guess, just to push back on the point that you made there, I guess you could say that, you know, maybe they should have strengthened, but Brighton still came sixth. I mean, that's an unbelievable achievement. I guess if you're being even more last half empty, you could say, yeah, we could have strengthened, it could have been a top four. But yeah, the achievement from the team is just been unbelievable. I saw in Tony Bloom's annual review that he said this is the best football that the club has ever played. And I don't think, you know, any would argue, just the amount of plaudits coming the way of De Zerbi for the way he sets Brighton up. You know, Guardiola, Klopp, the names, the list goes on in terms of sort of the admiration coming Brighton's way. But yeah, I mean, it's just a fantastic season. But looking ahead to next season, Tom, you've done a little bit of planning ahead or looking ahead as to who Brighton could face on Europe. Do you want to just run through the potential opponents?
Yeah, we've got quite a lot to go through here. Obviously, some of these teams we might not be able to face because they might be in the same pot as us in the group stages. And also some of them got to deal with a qualifying rounds before going into the group stage draw. There's still quite a fair bit to play for. And just going through the dates here, unless something happens over in Scotland, in the fact that Inverness, Caledonian Thistle, shock Celtic to lift the Scottish Cup, we will be seeing Aberdeen in Europa League next season. In the qualifying rounds, it's amazing to see that Ajax, who were finalists not that long ago, semi-finalists in the Champions League sooner than that, are in the qualifying rounds of the Europa League. They haven't had the best of seasons. Alfred Schreuder wasn't a great successor to Erik ten Hag. John Huijten, they're full of promise, but fell off the bandwagon a little bit towards the end of it. So it'd be interesting to see how Ajax fare in Europa League. One team that's confirmed in Ligue 1 is Marseille on league merit. We also have Toulouse to consider as well after they won the Coupe de France. Serie A is going to be an interesting one. Two places up for grabs, and it's between Atalanta, Roma, and Juventus in the last game of the season.
And Atalanta, big rivals to Brescia, where De Zerbi's from, and he hates Atalanta, so that could be an interesting one.
So that I mean, there's a great twist there already. Like, you could just imagine how much he'll be really up for that if we get yeah, them in our draw.
And the knee slide incoming if we score.
Exactly. Looking over to Spain, Real Betis and Villarreal have qualified in Ligue 1 on their league positions. Villarreal, I mean, is a great one if you're a fan of Benidorm. So Brian taking over Benidorm and then making the short trip down to the Yellow Submarine on the Thursday night. Why not? Real Betis is probably more of a more quaint place in Spain, shall we say. Again, another great choice. Next door to Spain in Portugal, Sporting CP. We've got the chance there. So potential trip to beautiful Lisbon too. Again, the blue and white taking over there. They might get a bit confused thinking we're Porto fans, but let's hope not. And then we've got, I mean, there's a fair few other places we've got. Freiburg in the Bundesliga as well, after the absolute drama in the Bundesliga in the last game of the season last weekend, where Munich scrapes through and God knows how that happened. Austria down in the playoff rounds, LASK. In Serbia, we have Čukarički.
Last but not least.
Yay, there we go. Serbia is, I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation, but it's Čukarički, who finished third in the Serbian league. We've got Antwerp as well in Belgium, but they could still reach the Champions League, I think, if they finish second in their respective league. I don't think that's the case for them, though, because I tell a lie. Yes, they can, because they're tied with none other than Tony Bloom's Royal Union Saint-Gilloise. So they're level on points with each other going into the last game of the season. Be very interesting to see what happens next there. That will be decided on Sunday. Yes, Sunday. So Antwerp will go there. So probably be Genk, unless Genk beat Antwerp and USG beat Club Brugge, we'll be welcoming Antwerp into Europa League. So there's a lot of fairly big names in this. Big names. Of course, as well, we might be welcoming another Italian side, Fiorentina, playing West Ham United next week in the Conference League final. it'd be interesting to see if another Italian side can win that one, or if it's going to be West Ham that will be joining us in Europa League. Again, be hilarious to see West Ham there, considering the fact they haven't had the best of seasons, really. And they've been flirting with relegation more than they have done with Europa League spots in the league. And you've got plenty more on offer here. We've got further down, third qualifying round, you've got Olympiacos, you've got Slavia Prague. So I'm sure many Brighton fans will be praying for a trip to Greece and a trip to Prague as well, for all their glory. Exciting times. I know that there's someone on Reddit who put up a hypothetical pot of all the teams as well. Again, PSV Eindhoven could potentially drop down. We've got Champions League spots from the third qualifying round dropping down to the Europa League group stages. So there's plenty there at our disposal where we could be facing really strong teams. And I'm loving every minute of it. Can't wait for it. 1st of September is the group stage draw. So be sure to bookmark that, book it off so that you could book all the hypothetical flights that you can possibly imagine. I don't know when the fixtures are out. I assume it's like the day after or some point next, the following week, because it's got to be a quick turnaround, because the first group stage game is 20 days after the group stage draw. So there's no messing about when it comes to looking for the cheap deals to fly out to XYZ. So see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, some of those names. Who are the? Just, I guess, if you got your name, what's your ideal dream group there? Just look at maybe the biggest, best locations.
Oh, okay. Well, let's base it on someone on Reddit put forward the hypothetical projected pots. And if you see it, you see it on Reddit. We'll put it on the post on the YouTube channel as well, just for you to get an understanding of where I'm coming from with this. Obviously, in this, because of our coefficient being so low, we would be in pot three. So from pot one, you could have the likes of Roma and Ajax coming into this. Villarreal too. So pick those three out, and then
Leverkusen as well. Don't Brighton and Leverkusen have an interesting link?
Yes, but Leverkusen haven't got promotion to didn't qualify. It's Freiburg.
There you go.
They do, and it would have been. I think that would have been fantastic. The relationship that Brighton fans and Leverkusen fans have is one that I really, really like. But sadly, Leverkusen finished sixth, so they're in the Conference League for next season. That was more or less secured a couple of weeks ago. They just haven't been on the great run at the moment towards the end of it, so it'll be interesting to see what Xabi Alonso does next season. Looking ahead to all the other games that we could have, again, potentially looking at Atalanta, potentially a trip to Rome or Turin, and that will probably most likely be in either pot one or two. I think it's a tough one. I don't know who I fancy. I just fancy all of them. I fancy taking them all on. We'll take them all on. We'll just create our own Super League. That's what I reckon we should do. Just host it at the Amex and then have home advantage and then just win it all. But there's some ridiculous names in here, like Karabag potentially in Azerbaijan. Who fancies a trip to Baku, ladies and gentlemen? Big trips to Astana in Kazakhstan, perhaps, or go to Maccabi Haifa in Israel. There are potential to go to Ukraine or, again, face Freiburg in Germany. We've got Sheriff Tiraspol over in Macedonia. Monaco can't do it. Ferencváros in Hungary as well. So there's plenty of European trips at our disposal. Think you're going to have to ask me when the seasons are over everywhere else for me to get a better understanding of who we could face and what's the dream draw.
Yes, well, definitely definitely exciting times. Looking a little bit further ahead, obviously Brighton have a massive summer in store, potentially with, you know, McCaslin and Kaiser leaving. Just want to ask Tom, do you think Brighton need to strengthen basically in every single position? Because just quickly, you know, it's uncertain about Sanchez. Lamptey's obviously been injured quite a lot of right back. So I guess if he stays fit, then him and Veltman can rotate. But Estupiñán played a crazy amount of games, had no breaks. And I think they need to strengthen left back. Levi Cole, don't know what's going to happen to him. And for me, Cole has actually overtaken Webster in the pecking order. I think his performances are just better at the moment. So I think they need more strength and depth at centre-back. Obviously, midfield, if McAllister and Caicedo go. Potentially, even up front. I mean, it's interesting to see what happens with some of the low-knee guys. You got, obviously, Simon Adingra. You got Steven Alzate. You got Zakiri Abdessima. This is a huge summer for Brighton, is it not?
It is. It is. And absolutely. And I know we touched on this in the previous episode about the loan players. Just to give you a run through of what we've got here, according to the transfer marks, I'm pretty sure there's a couple of players we've also missed out here, and probably because they consider them as under-21s. So you've got Kasper Kozlowski, who is in Eredivisie at the moment with Vitesse. 19-year-old, very, very highly thought of Polish midfielder. I think he's got a chance to maybe stake a claim in the pre-season. Abdallah Sima, he's been so unlucky with injuries, and playing for a team like Angus in Ligue 1, who were just, well, they were just dead certs to go down, and they haven't had really a season to remember. And I don't think Sima wants to look fondly at the season just gone. But then you've got Simon Adingra, who has been sensational for USG. 21 years old. He's keen to just really push on. Ivory Coast winger. He's got bags of talent. And I think he'd be someone that can really compete with Matoma on that left wing and adds depth there as well. Aaron Connolly, no. I think being in that championship outfit and really just... I think he's had his chance and it just hasn't worked out for him. And I think it'll be a good time for him to just go somewhere. If that's going to be a case of going back out on loan and just run the contract down, so be it. And I mean, Steven Alzate, I'm a big Alzate fan. I think he's great. I think he's a really, really good central midfielder. But he's enjoyed his time at Standard Liège. And I think they've made it no secret that they want to keep him. I can't remember if it was a loan to buy, but it'd be interesting to see what happens in the preseason. I would like to see him have the chance to work under De Zerbi. I think if Alzate was in the squad when De Zerbi was here, I think we'll be talking about a very different Alzate. I think he's one that he can definitely be putting an arm around him and show him his belief in the same way that he has done with Solly March. Michael Kobovnik, the left back, who then said that he's a central midfielder. He was on loan at Fortuna Düsseldorf. No, again, someone that I think isn't going to fit the model for us. So I think he's going to be someone that just needs to be put to the side. Centre-back Hayden Roberts, he's full of promise. His contract does expire this summer, I believe.
Just a bit of news on that. So he basically took to social media this week, and he said, and I quote, "Thank you for everything over the last 8 years. I'm looking forward to what God has next for me." So he's essentially said goodbye to Brighton. The Brighton-born defender, 21 years old, spent this season on loan at Derby County, and then a couple of seasons ago was at Rochdale. It's a shame because he is, in the past, has sort of said he wanted to play hundreds of games for Brighton, but I think we spoke about it before, how the trajectory of some of the youth players and younger players has now been, it's been left behind by how rapid Brighton's rise is. And unfortunately, he's, I think, one of those victims. So, I think he only played maybe a dozen or so games. Sad that he didn't kick on after he probably showed, I think he showed a lot of promise. You know, there's a lot of excitement about him when he played as an 18-year-old back in 2019 in the Carabao Cup, but you know, didn't make a FA Cup or Premier League appearance for Brighton. I think it was on the Carabao Cup. So I guess we all wish him well. Sad that Brighton, the local lad, couldn't make it. But, you know, the standards are so high at Brighton these days.
Absolutely. And look, we've got a couple of other loanings to go for. Is Kel Sherpin. Again, I don't think he's got himself a bit of a future at the club. It'd be interesting to see what happens. But again, he got shipped over to Vitesse. And again, I don't think it really works out well for him over there either. One player that I do think might be an interesting one is Andy Zakiri. Now, he could play on the wings. He could play up front. But with Danny Welbeck, Dennis Undav, and now Evan Ferguson and João Pedro in the mix, will Zakiri be keen to keep him there as a rotation player? Basel have got that option to make that loan a permanent deal. He's done well at Basel. He's been a big contributor to their run in Europa Conference League. He's performed in Europe. He's performing in the big matches in the Swiss Pro League. Maybe he's just found his feet out there. Personally, I would love to see him play. There was a couple of times where I just thought the glimpses that we saw with him under Potter, he would be a good fit for the future and just needs build up and get the confidence in. He comes in with European experience, so he knows what it's like, the demands to play three times a week. So I think that that's something that can really help our players who are just about to do it for the first time in their careers and just get a bit of an understanding of what it's like for him when he was over in Switzerland. But at the same time, would he want just to play first team football now? Does he feel like he's found his level? Does he want to push on and just take that risk for one more season? He does have a year left, according to Transfer Marks. So it will be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, like you say, really, shame about Hayden Roberts. But like you say, like the trajectory the club is going versus where these youth players are going, there's always going to be those harsh decisions that is going to be, thanks for everything, lad. Wasn't meant to be. All the best. It is what it is, sadly.
Yes. Switching up a bit, Tom. Brighton's player of the season. Now, this is a tough question because there are, in previous years, I don't know if there were so many players who had, you know, you could make a good case for, you know, for any of them. For me, like, you know, there's, you could say Lewis Dunk is up there. You could say Pervis Estupiñán is up there. You could say Solly March. You could say McAllister. You could say Gross. You could say Caicedo. I mean, there's a lot of players there. I know I've kind of put you on the spot here. Can you name? Should we go? Do you want to go for a top three, or do you want to just go for an outright one?
I'm going to go for the outright one, and I'm going to say it's Solly March. I think how he's turned himself around this season, and I've always said this, I think I've said this about five times in this podcast. The thing with Solly March that stood out for me was a quote from Glenn Murray when he was at the Albion, where he said, "Solly March is the most frustrating player I've played with because what he does in the training pitch is frightening, but he doesn't translate it onto the football pitch on the Saturday." And he's repeated that a couple of times actually for BBC Sport. And now you actually see him, what he is capable of this season. And I don't even think we actually seen the peak Solly March yet, because De Zerbi's just pushing him more and more and more. He got a brand new contract this season. He fully deserves it. You could tell that De Zerbi absolutely loves him. I mean, him just walking into the office, just singing his name, it's just, one, it's just hilarious. And two, just shows how much De Zerbi gets it as well. And I'd be really, really excited to see what Solly March does the following season. Second place for me would be Pascal Gross, just for the pure rose-tinted glasses that I wear, because I just love that beautiful German. You know, he's nicknamed De Kaiser for a reason. He's been such a good leader in that midfield. And he's an attacking-minded midfielder. He creates so many chances. And outside the traditional top six, his stats are better than anyone else's. But he also comes in at right back. He's also filled in at left back. He's tried to He works really well as a vice captain. He's kind of, he gets the club as well. He kind of knows where the next level needs to be, and he pushes himself. And I mean, the guy's in his 30s now, and I think he shows no sign of stopping either. So I think he comes in as a close second place. And then third, there's a tricky one. Third's a tricky one. It could be any of McAllister, Caicedo, Estupinan, Mitoma. Any of them really can get a mention there. And I think if you asked fans for their top three, all three will be different. And you can't really argue with it, because the way this team has played this season has been incredible. And the way that they have played themselves as individuals has been incredible. And the link-up play has been incredible. How the Zerbi has set them up, incredible. So it's going to be an interesting one to see what the announcement is going to be. End of season, we've got Europa League to look forward to. But for me, Solly March gets it. What about you?
Yeah, I was umming and ahhing about who to pick. I think my top three, I think my number one is Caicedo. I just think Brighton, if you, and I guess there's sort of different criteria that you could say. So, for example, you might say that Solly March is the most improved player. You know, he scored 8 goals and bagged 8 assists in all competitions. But for me, just in terms of a player that is so important, and I think Brighton are not as good a, nearly as good a team without him, I think Caicedo, just for the consistency, just for the number of different sort of roles he can play in midfield, also his versatility dropping at right back, I just think he is, has been fantastic. I think the next thing, if possible, you could add maybe, say, I mean, this is quite harsh, but if he can add like a couple more goals into his game, that would just make him, you know, one of the best. So I'd probably just give it to Caicedo. For a while, I was thinking Mitoma, but he's then had a bit of the last couple of months, I think, I wouldn't say he's been found out, but I think there's a number of defenders who've done a decent job on him. The goals have sort of dried up a little bit, but there was a stretch between, I'd say, like before the World Cup to maybe February, March time, where he was just unplayable. He was fantastic to watch. It was just so exciting. He's my sort of player with the X factor when he really gets going. It's just, it's, I really feel for defenders because it must be terrifying. I'd say number two, I think I might join you there. I think Pascal Gross, you know, I think this is his best scoring season in all competitions since he's joined the club. 10 goals, 10 assists in all competitions. He shows no sign of slowing down. Again, the versatility, just does a job. Lots of assists as well. It's just, yeah, he's got so many strings to his bow. And also, you know, we talked about it previously. He was the one who popped up with that goal against Southampton just to ease the nerves and secure Brighton Europe. So I think, yes, number two is Pascal Gross. Number three, I think, yeah, March is up there. McAllister. I think I'm going to go with Estupinan, because that was a position where Brighton had obviously lost their previous player of the year in Mark Cucurella, who was a revelation, brilliant signing for 15 or so million. And you're thinking, oof, God, this is going to be, you know, big shoes to fill. And he's turned out to be a better player. He is maybe not as versatile, but that's it. Sorry?
I called it as well. I said Estupinan would be better than Cucurella.
Nice one. But he got 7 assists in all competitions this season, which is pretty impressive for a left back. Got a goal as well, finally. Should have been more against Palace, obviously. But yeah, just in terms of the bar was set very, very high, and for him to come in and raise it even further is massive credit to him. He's got a lot of talent, just, you know, boundless energy running up and down that touchline. Fantastic to see. So yeah, I think he would be my number three. But honourable mentions to Solly March. Obviously, Alexa McCaslin was a top scorer with 12 goals, but he did score quite a few penalty goals, which I'm not trying to, you know, dismiss that, but I just think that maybe just adds it to it, pads his stats up a little bit. And then Lewis Dunk as well. So yes, they would be my top three.
There you go. You can't argue with that. It's different, but like I said earlier, you can't argue with it because they all deserve a spot in the top three. But it'd be interesting to see what the award ceremony is going to be like at the end of the season. I don't know when that is, actually.
Usually they do it before the end of the season. So maybe they were just...
They didn't want to flirt with it. They didn't want to tempt fate, did they?
Yes. I wonder, because I think it might be a case of they're heading off pretty quick on their holidays. I think they're definitely early. I wouldn't be surprised if the awards were very soon, because they'll be lost for weeks because they'll be off partying or whatever. Yes, I mean, unbelievable season, sixth in the league. And yeah, so much excitement. Just hope they can keep on to their best players. One thing to maybe finish on, a little bit of sad news on for me, I guess. So I finished my last shift at Sussex Live on Sunday. The company reached PFC, making quite a lot of people redundant, sadly, and that's me included. So, yes, I'm off to pastures new. It's been a fantastic, you know, nearly three seasons covering this brilliant club. My mum is now a diehard fan, which is hilarious, despite the fact she had no interest at all in football before. And, you know, going to games, speaking with, you know, Roberto De Zerbi and getting to know him and others and the media team, it's just been a real treat. And I feel very privileged and honoured to have been given this chance. And I'd love to cover Brighton again. Because they're such a great club and, you know, there's so much to write about. There's such an exciting time. So unfortunately, no European tour for me. But yes, hopefully not goodbye completely. And I guess, depending on what happens, not quite sure what will happen with the podcast. If we can keep it going, I definitely want to, because this has been great fun with you, dear boy Toy. But yes, just want to say a big, big thanks to everyone for reading all my work and being so welcoming to me online. And yeah, hopefully this is not goodbye. This is the first chapter of many.
Yeah. I'm gutted to see Richie go. Working with him personally has been great. It's been a privilege over the last season. If anyone is looking for a good sports journalist, I mean, look, guys, he's on a free transfer now. Transfer window's open and you've got free agent Osman right here. So sign him up. Sign him up. The stuff he's been writing about as well has been great to read. And, you know, he came in when there's, fair to say, not many media outlets cover the Brighton week in, week out. The Argus have always done a superb job, but then Richie's coming in as well and has also done an equally grand job too. And, you know, many, many people love reading his stuff. So, Richie, thank you for everything you've done. Gutted to see you go, but, you know, you're gonna bounce back. I know you are, and wherever you go. So, and no doubt you'll be coming back on the Teams Like Brighton podcast in the near future soon. So, but yeah, guys, that's everything we have to go. That's everything now. That's everything now for the season. Can't believe it. It's like as if we only started this yesterday. But now look,
What are we going to do?
I know. It's weird. There's no European. There's no international tournaments to look forward to either. It's bizarre. But look, guys, thank you so much for listening to us our whole season. Be sure to like, subscribe, and everything in between as well. If you're watching YouTube or on your podcasts, wherever that may be. We will be back. We will be back talking about the Albion ahead of the season and when the fixture lists come out and all that jazz. We might even do a few odd pieces here and there. Who knows? But look, guys, thank you so much once again. Take care. And as always, up the Albion.